thank you so much for joining me today. I am Drew, and today we are very happy to bring in Katie Meador from the Family Services of Tulare County, the Executive Director. And Katie, thank you so much for joining us on this day.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me today.
Family Services of Tulare County, this is a service that's been around nearly 40 years now, correct?
Yes, we're coming up on that. We were founded in 1983 by a group of concerned citizens who really wanted to make sure that there was a domestic violence shelter in Tulare County for women and children who were fleeing abuse in the home. So they rallied together and the community really built us. And now we're a large multi-service organization, you know, working with victims of crime here in Tulare County.
Which is scary to say that that A, there's a need for an organization like this and that the numbers keep climbing higher.
Yes. I mean, unfortunately, there is really a significant need for what we do. And most definitely, the need is real in Tulare County, even prior to sort of what our current events are and how that impacts victims. Tulare County is got rates of domestic violence and sexual assault that are anywhere from 25 to 50% higher than other urban areas in California. So we already deal with disproportionate rates of crimes, especially those that affect vulnerable people. So now when we're facing this in the time of COVID, it's even more relevant, even more necessary that we be here and be out in the community encouraging people to get support.
What's the mission of Family Services of Tulare County? And I guess draw it out and paint a picture of what actually people would get if they needed to contact you.
So our mission is to help children, adults, and families in Tulare County heal from violence and thrive in healthy relationships. And the way that we do that, we really focus on safe homes, safe relationships, safe children. So we believe those are core parts that will help our community to be stronger. So when we say safe homes, we're talking about immediate support and housing for victims of domestic violence who may have to leave in the middle of the night or sneak away from a home where there's been abuse, taking their children to safety. And when they come to Karen's House, that's the name of our domestic violence shelter, they get all of that. They get a place to stay, but they also get case management and counseling and food and all of the things that they need to transition. Because as you can imagine, that is a very difficult transition and can be very dangerous. We also operate the Rape Crisis Center for all of Tulare County. So our advocates are covering a geographic space the size of Connecticut with their services. So they're out, they respond to acute situations where there's been sexual assault. And in California, victims have a legal right to an advocate being there with them. And that's what we do. We have over 30 volunteers in that program alone who get extensive training to go out and be with someone in sort of one of the darkest points of their life. And so what we really feel like what we do there is crucial. We also offer housing. We do counseling. We do parenting. So really our goal is to help families and couples to really be safer and healthier so that we can help break generational cycles of violence.
In a situation like this, I mean, you guys really have multiple programs that are full-fledged programs from, the safe homes, relationships, and children. I mean, that's three different avenues that you guys have to cover that aren't really all clumped together.
We have some diversity to our programs, that's for sure. And the way we look at it is safety is the common thread. So physical and emotional safety for people helps them to do better in their relationships. It helps them to feel secure and centered and hopefully capable of like next level in their interactions within their home and with their children. So as you can imagine, this time more than any, people are feeling very insecure, right? Their safety whether it's physical or emotional, is really being threatened by this kind of invisible force. So it's really important that our staff be there, be available, and we're still doing that despite the stay-at-home orders. We're still operating remotely, but we're still also in person because we really do feel our work falls into that essential category, and we're sheltering people, feeding them, and so we need to be there.
My mother is a women's advocate. She works in this line, and she has told me that you know, there are people that don't think that they're being abused, or that they don't think that someone constantly yelling at them is being abuse. What is the definition of domestic violence?
When we talk about domestic violence, we're really talking about a pattern of abuse, which is coercive, which is controlling over another person. So people will ask me that, like, can domestic violence happen just one time? I suppose it could. I've rarely, if ever, seen that to be the case. There's typically a pattern of behavior. So it's usually that emotional abuse, the yelling, the name calling, the verbal threats, coupled with other things. So it can extend into things like stalking or following somebody when they are not giving you permission, all the way to financial abuse we're seeing, and also seeing in this time of coronavirus, we're seeing financial abuse be really relevant, where someone's, you know, not allowing somebody access to their financial resources or taking their money from them or not allowing them to work. All of those things can and do play a big part in what abuse looks like.
It's absolutely crazy to me to think that there are so many cases of this that go undetected or unreported because people don't think it's happening.
Absolutely. We really know that even with our agency supporting, you know, over 5,000 clients a year, we are just getting the tip of the iceberg in many cases. And so it's really important that we put out the message that this can happen to anyone. This does happen to anyone, and that people's need for support is valid and there is help available for them.
And when someone comes to you because of a domestic violence issue, what is the first step that will happen? I mean, obviously there's a transition period of monitoring, or do you go directly into get them out and get them protected?
Well, we really are coming from a survivor perspective. So we want to support that person in doing what they think is best in their situation. So it really starts with us listening to their experience. We believe that someone who has survived up to that point in a domestic violence situation really is the expert of their own situation. So we don't prescribe what will happen next. We want to come alongside them and work through that, because for some people, you know, they'll call our hotline and it makes a lot of sense given their situation for them to pursue a restraining order. But for someone else, that might not be safe, and that they may know that will actually upset their partner more than if they were to leave. So our goal is to safety plan with them, just like you do when you have your earthquake drill or your fire drill. You're thinking through, what would I do in this specific crisis situation? And that is a lot of what we're doing right now on the phone, is just talking with victims through, because they are sheltering in place, with their abuser. And so they're having to think through differently what safety might look like if that gets upset.
At what point should someone contact you? Couples that are together all the time like this, they're going to argue. There's going to be a blow up once in a while. But at what point should they contact you?
I think somebody should contact us the moment that they start to feel unsafe. And that can be emotionally unsafe or physically unsafe. But if something, I think we know that deep inside, like, we can feel the difference between what is just an argument, quote unquote, just an argument, versus what is potentially abusive and what is making me feel unsafe. So I think that is the point we would encourage them to reach out And I do think it's a sort of a misunderstanding. I think that sometimes people assume that our role is going to be like, okay, we're going to get you out. We're going to pack your stuff. We're going to help you run right now. And that's not always what makes sense for people. So we just want somebody to contact us, help walk through a safety plan, learn about your options, whether it's legally or, you know, housing-wise or whatnot. But we see plans that run the gamut of what people want to and choose to do in these types of situations. And our goal is just to be here to help and get them the best information that they could possibly have.
You hear so many times when someone is maybe under the services of a family services of Tulare County or a women's shelter going mm-hmm. back to their abuser. And the numbers of that are so common. Why is that?
Yeah, leaving is really hard. I mean, we all can, I think, empathize with that. And how difficult it is to end a relationship, right, in general, on a good day. And you factor in financial obligations, you factor in children. And I would always encourage people, like, never underestimate the power of love. And we all know, what do they say, love is blind. You know, it's like the things that we sort of choose sometimes in relationships are things that have been modeled for us, or you know, we're holding out for hoping that it's going to get better. And I think that's important to communicate, is that, you know, these relationships happen on a cycle, typically the cycle of violence. And we see there's this honeymoon phase, right? And I think people, a lot of people have that image of like an abuser coming in with flowers and apologies and things. That's really real. That comes from a real place. That really happens. And so a lot of times we see people are holding out for that person, for that kind, apologetic person. And it's like, if I just hold out a little bit longer, then that part of the cycle will be back. And ultimately what we do communicate to victims is that that cycle is going to keep repeating, and it is going to continue to get worse unless it's interrupted somehow, whether that's somebody leaving, whether that's counseling, whether that's some kind of intervention for that relationship.
You mentioned counseling, and in a situation mm-hmm. like this, does a couple's counseling, does that ever really help in a situation like this?
Typically, therapists will not see a couple together if they know that there is active domestic violence. It really becomes an ethical issue, right? Because one person has a different level of power and control in that situation. So it makes counseling pretty difficult as a couple. But we would certainly encourage the partners to receive their own support separately, and at times family work makes sense together. But really we want to start with those individuals and kind of work through, and then work on bringing everybody in together.
When someone is to the point when they have to get out, and they go and they stay at the women's shelter, what all can they expect while they're staying there? Obviously, it's a new environment, and they're not really sure what they're getting into. But what happened?
Right. I mean, can you imagine? It's so scary, just the thought of that. But I think people have this conception of a shelter is a big room with, bunk beds, and that's really not what Karen's house is like. It's really more of a home. So people call us on our hotline, which is a 24/7 number. And they talk to someone. We do a screening over the phone. Obviously, right now, in the time of COVID, we're asking some additional screening questions. We want to make sure we're trying to protect everybody's health. And so then we make arrangements if it's appropriate for that family to come. And we either help pick them up somewhere safe, or we give them instruction about how to meet us. And then we bring them to our little home, our Karen's house, which is really more like a home. It's got bedrooms, and there is a kitchen, and everybody cooks, you know, their own meals. Although we've been really fortunate during these months, especially, to be doing Friday night dinners, which our community has been sponsoring through local restaurants. So we're directing business to them too, but it gives the families who are in the shelter a night off of cooking. But yeah, then they get there and they start working with their case manager. They get access to a therapist, and they start working on what the next steps look like for their specific situation.
If there are children involved, are children welcome at Karen's House?
Of course, absolutely. So we are able to take individuals and as well as families. And we've been talking a lot about domestic violence in the context of, you know, a female victim, but we certainly know and are seeing more frequently men coming forward with their own experiences of having been on the receiving end of the abuse. So we actually made a change a couple of years ago, and we are able to take men, male victims, including male victims with children. So our facility is gone co-ed, and it's been a great experience. So we're just happy to be here for whoever needs us.
Is Karen's House secure? If someone is there because they're trying to escape the harm of someone else, is it secure to be there?
We do everything we can to make it secure. So it is a confidential location. We do have a camera system. We have 24-hour staff. We are a locked facility, so people can come and go as they please, certainly, but we do keep doors locked during the days. And really, the safety is, let's see how to say this. The safety really is a matter of everyone's concern. So everybody who's living there, we really communicate with them the importance of keeping this location confidential and working with us to protect the facility. So we certainly do everything we can to keep it as safe and confidential as possible.
How long can someone stay at the home?
So typically the starting stay is 30 days. However, we know even before everything changed in the world that 30 days is next to impossible for somebody to completely upend their life and start over. So we really see stays more like 60, 90, 120 days. And so that's kind of the higher end, but every situation is a little bit different. So we try to meet the family where they are.
The best part about Family Service of Tulare County is the fact that you're not just going to bring someone in. If it's to that point, you're not going to say, okay, you're here 2 weeks and then we're done with you. You're going to follow through, and
sure,
you know, you're not going to let the ball back into the abuser's court.
And of course, people are, you know, free to come and go as they choose. But we do acknowledge, I think you brought this up earlier, about it can be really complicated and hard to leave a situation like this. And we try to always make ourselves available. We always want to have those folks who are leaving us to maybe return to their situation, leave on good terms so that they know that if they need us again, we're going to be there. We're not going to judge them. We understand the dynamics of these relationships and the choices that they're faced with. So we will still be there.
Because it is such a common thing, which I hate saying common in this, because it should never be a common thing, but it is. What is the ongoing communication between you and the victims? Is this something that they can continually come back to you to be encouraged and to try to get their lives back in order?
Absolutely. And we really have a lot of opportunities that extend beyond Karen's House and the shelter. So we have an entire legal advocacy team who works with folks that don't come to the shelter necessarily, but who are pursuing different paths for safety. So we can help with restraining orders. We're still doing all of that remotely, virtually through Zoom right now. We do legal clinics throughout the whole county to talk about restraining orders and custody orders related to domestic violence. But we also have counseling that goes on, support groups. All of those things are available to people on an ongoing basis, regardless of whether they choose to live in the shelter or not.
For those that are thinking they need more information, go to fstc.net, or you can go on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Family Services TC. And it's great information and a great, easy way to contact for any kind of help like that. And before we run out of time, because this does go very fast, I want to talk about the fact that it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And that's a big one here in Tulare County, too.
Absolutely. So we operate Tulare County's only rape crisis center, and it is a 24/7 operation, just like the shelter. So we're available through our hotline 24 hours a day, And, you know, our role is really, again, to have that advocate available, whether it's a volunteer or staff person, to go out if someone needs to have an exam completed because there's been a sexual assault. And, you know, last year we accompanied survivors to well over 100 forensic exams in Tulare County, and about a third of those are children under the age of 18. And so I think people forget that that is really what we're talking about when we talk about sexual assault and sexual abuse. A big proportion of that is children. April is also Child Abuse Awareness Month. So it's sort of a tease into what we're talking about there. But being the only rape crisis center, we really rely on the community for support. And this being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we typically have done this Denim Day campaign, which is actually next Wednesday. I believe that's the 29th. And we normally would have, you know, folks in their workplaces, they relax the dress code for that day and they wear denim, which is a show of solidarity with survivors. That came out of a case in Italy back in the 90s where a judge basically told a victim, well, your jeans were so tight that you must have helped this offender get them off of you, and therefore it wasn't rape. And so we wear jeans, we wear denim in solidarity with survivors who face all kinds of blame and questioning of them and their motives. So we're hopeful that our community is going to come alongside us, since we can't really do our traditional workplace campaign this year with Denim Day. And so there are ways to wear your denim, take your selfie, send it to us, post it online and tag us on our social media so that we can raise awareness and show survivors that we're all coming alongside them in this month. And then people, of course, can donate. That's really what we need, is some support for the Rape Crisis Center, because it's a hard subject to talk about. It's hard to raise money for, too, because people, you know, don't want to talk about it. They don't want to think about this and what happens, but it really impacts so many people. I, you know, can't imagine a family or that sexual violence hasn't touched in some way. So hopefully people will feel compelled, because the funds that we raise are really our survivor fund. So we help with motel rooms, we help with food, we help with clothing or security or different things that survivors need. And this is our funds that we raise this month to help to do that through the whole year.
Obviously, people can go again, fstc.net, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram is Family Services TC. So be part of all of these events that are happening here in the very near future. Also, a little bit about sexual assault. It's just 1 month that people kind of can look at it as, oh, this does happen, but it happens the other 11 months as well. What is it that someone should look for if they feel that someone in their family has been raped or assaulted?
I would put out there that our hotlines are open for family members and friends. It doesn't have to be a victim or survivor themselves. So anybody can call us to say, hey, this is what's going on with my family member, and I'm concerned, and I don't know how to approach them. And our advocates will talk them through that. But I would say if you believe someone has been assaulted or hurt in some way, approaching them from a place of like, I'm here to support you and not judge you, I believe you. I think that's something we don't communicate enough to survivors. It's like, I believe you, no questions. And that's the role that we as family and friends should be playing. And then, you know, ask if they would like to talk to somebody for some more support. And that's the role that we would play.
In a situation that happens a lot, because it is, again, the word common comes up, and I hate using that word in this situation, but
that's
with
the reality, though,
domestic violence and sexual assault, it could happen both in the same household with a child and the mother or the father being abused.
We see the intersection of child abuse and domestic and sexual violence all the time. That, you know, there's significant research to show that that is true, that in a home where someone is being abused in a domestic violence situation, the probability of child abuse skyrockets, and vice versa with sexual violence. So we know these things are co-occurring, And it's yet another reason that, you know, our agency, Family Services, has chosen to diversify our services so that we can really be available where there are these kind of co-occurring situations.
It so hurts my heart to think that a mother won't say anything about a stepfather or an older brother or someone outside of the family that lives in the home hurting their child because they have been abused and are afraid of that. But you shouldn't be afraid to call and get help.
Absolutely. We want to encourage people to call us, and we want to clarify that I think sometimes people think, oh, if I call the Rape Crisis Center, the police are going to be involved. And we are not mandated reporters in that way. So if someone calls us, it can be completely anonymously. It will be confidential, and we are not going to report it to the police on your behalf. We really want to work with you to support you in whatever choice somebody makes about involving the criminal justice system. And that is super right. It's the right move for a lot of people. And for others, it doesn't feel safe or right. And we really respect that. So just because someone calls to inquire or get help does not mean like a police report is happening.
Help is available 24/7 with Family Services of Tulare County. And I want to stress that because no matter your crisis situation, whether it be domestic violence or rape crisis, there is someone always there. And of course, 911 should be your first go-to if you are in danger. But what are the hotlines that are available, and where can they find those hotlines if they need them?
Our hotlines, you can find all the information about contacting all of our programs on our website, which again is that FSTC, like Family Services Tulare County, .net. And then our 24-hour domestic violence hotline is 559-732-5941. And our 24-hour rape crisis hotline is 559-732-7273.
Go over and check them out. Follow them on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. It's a great information source. Even if you don't know anything about this horrible situation that I keep using the word common because it has become so common, you can learn a lot just by following along and seeing pictures and learning stories. And there are ways that you can help. We've talked about the Denim Day and being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, but how else can someone help?
So again, yes, people can donate towards our Denim Day campaign, and that will be really out and available, you know, very loud on social media next Wednesday, the 29th of April, to kind of close out our month. And they can donate online, contact free, is fstc.net/SAM, like SAAM, and that's directly linking to our Denim Day campaign. But other ways that people can help, like you said, follow us on social media, join our mailing list, learn about ways to get involved. We do have an amazing group of volunteers. We have over 100 volunteers agency-wide, so that's nearly as big as our staff. It really doubles our capacity. So right now, we obviously, the volunteer opportunities are limited, but we are encouraging people to learn more about it so that when the time is right, we can get them plugged in. And so they can learn about how to volunteer either on a one-time basis or ongoing. And then again, we are accepting donations for other things like sponsoring a meal, Friday night dinner for Karen's house, or we just had a group send us 25 pillows for the shelter, because we give everybody a brand new pillow and they get to take it with them, because really when you're in that situation, you want to rest your head on a fresh pillow. There's just something about that. So, you know, there are lots of ways to do things from small to big, and we would encourage people to get connected.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for joining us. And again, FSTC.net on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Family Services TC. Keep fighting the fight and helping Tulare County. And we didn't even get to get to a lot of the information that I wanted to talk about. But even though coronavirus is here, you guys are still working and can still be contacted. So if someone needs help, reach out and get help from Family Services of Tulare County. And Katie, thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.